companionship. Just look how she struts.
It's like she owns the place.
And see how she curls up and cuddles her person.
The pitch on her purring is simply perfect.
Nice one.
Fantastic cat. But really the best way to know an amazing shelter pet like Nico is to meet one.
Visit theshelterpetproject.org today. Adopt.
Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
Well, good morning and welcome to Saturday in the Studio. I'm Tom King, and we are here, as we are most Saturdays, with Merle Kelch. Kelch & Associates in Wausau to take your financial questions, 715-845-2155. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, and I am not Tom King, which I don't know if that's good or bad.
Well, you just came out with a proposition that made you sound like sort of a progressive, liberal, moderate kind of guy.
Actually, no, it wasn't my thought. I'm just bringing it up.
We'll talk about this in just a second. You're gonna really love this one.
Amazing.
A suggestion on how to help people retire with more in their retirement accounts than they probably normally would if it was left up to them.
You know, folks, this is going to be interesting because even my good friend here, Tom King, appears conservative even with this article.
Well, I'd have to think about this. I'd have to do a little more thinking on this.
Oh, you know, you're on your way.
Well,
from the first time I met you many years ago, which we've been doing this program for a while, 13, 14 years, somewhere there. You have progressively become more conservative, and I am proud of you.
There's no reason to start the show with insults this morning. Come on. let's start with this premise, since it is kind of interesting. 715-845-2155 is the number to call here if you have a question for Merle. You said that you found an article that suggested a very interesting way to get people to put more into their 401ks or to save more into their retirement accounts.
Well, we might as well go ahead and set this up. We're going to open up with this, folks, and this is going to make you ticked off, but the whole part about this is
that... Oh, it's going to make a lot of people ticked off.
We are here to help answer your questions. And in here, Tom, I think this is even more too liberal for you in this particular conversation. So in here, as it starts out, I got to get right to the beginning.
This is from one of our favorite websites, MarketWatch.
Yeah, this is from MarketWatch.com, and the columnist is Robert Powell, and these are not his words. He's popping up a paper, and the paper comes out from the Rock Center for Corporate Governance at Stanford Law School by Jacob Hale Russell, and the draft of his working paper is called The Separation of Intelligence and Control, The Retirement Savings Crisis, and the Limits of Soft Paternalism. As he writes.
Okay.
And as we go in here, he's talking about the soft paternalism of our government trying to nudge us to save are not working. And, folks, isn't this just simply a matter of self-reliance? Save or you're not going to have the income that you want during retirement. Is it simply that? So he goes through and talks about
this
thing.
Yeah, but for every ant, there are a lot of grasshoppers. You remember the old tale of the ant and the grasshopper saving for the winter.
Well, this is true, but it's all the ants that still need to save, correct?
The grasshoppers. The ants do their saving.
I apologize.
It's the grasshoppers.
I'm going from a numbers thing. My apologies. So anyway, it goes into this article and talks about all the things that we talk about on this program. And it says the paternalism isn't doing very well. And I'm paraphrasing here, folks, because, you know, many people, when they leave job A and they go to job B, they don't know what they're doing. So they cash out their 401ks and pay the taxes on it rather than moving into their new 401k. They say investors choose high-fee mutual funds rather than choosing low-fee mutual funds to do it on their own. Well, they can't do it on their own because they're not getting the proper education that they should have. And I'm continuing. Employees fail to diversify their portfolios properly because they're not diversifying. The average investor, of course, doesn't know how to rebalance their portfolios. A lot of employees don't put money inside their 401k to take advantage of their employer's matching. And you can break all this down and simply say people just don't know and we're not doing enough to force people to put money inside of their 401ks.
And there is the operative word.
Yes.
Force.
Exactly.
And the suggestion being that in order to solve the retirement crisis and the fact that too many people are retiring with not enough money in their retirement accounts.
It appears as though in this article that they would have us have more government regulation to force us to put money in our investments. Isn't this the same thing as... Oh, we're going to take part of your 401k and put it in the market, and we're going to force you to do that on your own.
No, I don't think it's that. I mean, this paper isn't asking for control of your 401k.
It's only the synopsis.
It's basically telling you that you have to put money into it every month. Not as a suggestion, not as something you hope to do, but something that you need to do. Just like you have taxes withheld from your check, you would automatically have money withheld from your check for your retirement as well.
Oh, Tom, this goes even deeper than that.
Okay.
It's even more. They continue on that we need to stop 401ks to a certain degree because they're evil, because it forces people to make their own decision about investment choices. They're supposed to go into some sort of a regulated account that there's no choice. They already exist.
Well, you work with people every day. It's part of your job to educate them and to put them in places where they need to be. So would you say that the majority of people out there trying to do investing on their own are doing it wrong or are not in a position to make the right choices?
Certainly so, but the brilliant people are listening to this program and others and getting the education that they need to make better investment choices. If we take a look at some things, Section 404C of the Internal Revenue Code talks about 401Ks. And 401Ks, by design and by law, by the statutes inside, employers have to give reasonable education as to how the 401K works, functions, and some phone numbers and people to talk to. And most 401Ks do that. But what happens is you go into a lot of 401Ks and people don't either want to know, don't need to know, or don't have any recommendation, or don't have anybody to tell them at least do this at minimum, and they don't do anything. Well, if you stick your head in the sand, the storm is still going to come. It just depends upon where the storm is going to blow, you know. And so from this, then the rules are already in place for these sort of things. Employers are supposed to give reasonable education. 401Ks, as you well know, Tom, from your 401K here in the office, they send you more information than you could possibly want about investment choices, where they go.
Oh, you're supposed to read that stuff?
Exactly. they give you the education of, you know, the least amount of risk to the most amount of risk,
yeah,
and everything in the middle. So all this stuff is laid out so simply, but eventually you simply have to start saving, no matter who you are. If you're the person who's starting and the lowest person just starting out in the company or the president, eventually you have to start saving, and you have to make that conscious decision to do so.
We can't have
the soft paternalism and make more rules to tell you that now you have to save on purpose.
Yeah, but, I mean, there are those who say it is my inalienable right to not save and to...
This is true. So if that person starves, then it shouldn't be on our tax dollar when they're starving during retirement.
So you're suggesting that people who don't save should just be thrown to the wolves when it comes to retirement time, and there should be no safety net and no government program?
It's called Social Security.
Okay, so you're not advocating getting rid of Social Security?
No, by no means. I'm not advocating that by any means, but if that's what you choose to live on, that's what you choose to live on. If you want to live on anything more than Social Security, you have savings. Remember, Social Security was supposed to be a safety net. It wasn't supposed to be a retirement plan.
Right.
That's right from the founding days.
Yeah.
And so in there, we don't need another government plan that says we're going to force you to save 10% of your income. Could you imagine the backlash that would happen if the government actually did that? So you need to take 10% of your gross income and you need to put it away inside of savings by law. There'd be riots in the streets.
You think there would be riots in the streets or just a lot of bitching and complaining?
I think there'd be riots in the streets. Because you take go across to America. Aside from the taxes that are already happening, but we could have that discussion already. If you take everybody's income now, drop it by 10%, something mandatory that the government put on their thumb, which I don't think constitutionally it has the right to do. But if it did that, there'd be a lot of upset people.
But let's face it, most of society wastes at least 10% of their income.
There's no doubt about it, but it's their choice.
Okay, all right. I would imagine most people would agree with you on that. And then they will have to fend for themselves when the time comes.
And
as you've said before on the program, you can either spend your retirement when you retire or spend your retirement while you're still working.
Exactly. You can spend it one way or another. You're either going to retire on the brown side of the grass or the green side of the grass. It depends upon what you want to do. You know, I don't know if I'll ever stop working at one particular point in time, but you know, my plan is to slow down and to keep working. I don't know that I'll ever just simply say, stop, I'm out of this investment world, I'm never going to do this again. I get a kick out of what I do. For me, it's not work. So that being the case, I'll probably continue on. But many people just dislike what they do and they want to stop at some point in time, which is fantastic. But you have to have a plan of saying, what am I going to do and what lifestyle would I like at that particular point in time?
Right,
and we can't have the government go through and just simply say, well, you need to save this percentage of your income and that's it, and Hawk-tunk baby and everything else.
Well, I think how much better off we would all be if that, in fact, were the case when the time comes to retire.
And there's countries that work like that.
Let's go to the phone here before we take a break. Good morning. Who are we talking to?
Morning.
Carol.
Carol, go ahead.
Morning, Carol.
Good morning. I'm listening to you talking about saving. When do you decide to start spending? And I know I've listened to you a lot, so it's like, okay, if we all knew when we were going to die, that would be a real easy answer.
Exactly. That'd be awesome, wouldn't it? Well, maybe not. You know, Carol, I have to
yeah,
say,
good
my,
and bad,
my 22-year-old has on his computer, it has his, you know, actuarially when he's going to pass away. And I'm like, isn't that morbid? He goes, no, it's kind of cool. I said, bud, that's because you're 22.
Wait until
you're 50.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, so
my husband and I have this conversation all the time. It's like, you know, we've been saving. When do you feel comfortable to start spending?
You know, that's entire, you know, that is one of the toughest questions that I have when I work with clients in my office. And here's why. You know, we're walking up the steps, and all of a sudden retirement starts coming around. You're looking around saying, God, maybe we could do this. And the next step's like jumping off to the abyss because you're used to a paycheck coming every 2 weeks usually. And so it's like one of the most frightening, difficult times to do. And here's the thing that you have to look at. You have to say is, okay, one, can I mentally do it anymore? Am I finished? There's a lot of people who have the financial wherewithal to stop and to retire, but they just don't feel like it yet. We had clients that were in their 70s, well into their 70s, and finally the employer says, you're done working, go home, you know. And very much done in humor and out of thankfulness. But, yeah, because he just liked working, and so he just puts around and do his work and still make a nice income doing some sales. What's interesting is all of his counterparts of all the other companies, they were in the same boat, so they're all a bunch of 70-year-old guys that have donuts and do sales back and forth once a week. So the thing in here, Carol, is you look at it and say, you know, when do I just finally have enough? The second part is do we have enough money set aside to do the lifestyle that we want to? And so that's where the conversation comes in with, you know, a financial advisor or somebody of that nature, and sitting down having the conversation and say, okay, if I take all the money that we've saved for retirement, okay, just put aside your emergency fund, that type of thing. We take all the money and I take that number, I multiply it, and I'm just giving you a general number here, Carol. Say like by 4% or by 5%. That number plus Social Security pension, can we live on that? And if we look at that math and the answer says yes, that means you have the financial wherewithal to stop working should you choose and have the now the investments and the savings to start pulling that money away from you. Now, where a lot of people look at this and they say, well, geez, I've got, and Carol, I'm making up a number here, okay? I've got $500,000 sitting inside of my 401k, husband's 401k, a couple of IRAs from jobs over the years. I've got enough of that $500,000. So when I retire of that $500,000, I'm going to take out $50,000 a year. With that and Social Security, I'm going to live fantastic. Well, the problem is if you're taking out $50,000 on $500,000, that's 10%, eventually you're going to run out of money. The probability is about 90% or so that you'd run out of money because you're taking out too much of the principal along with the interest along the way.
Unless you live a very unhealthy lifestyle and go skydiving and eat cream puffs for breakfast. And shorten your lifespan that way, I suppose.
And by the way, Carol, that sounds like a fantastic plan.
I know.
Krispy Kreme.
That sounded good.
Yeah. I'm talking about bacon-flavored Krispy Kreme donuts.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for Dunkin' Donuts to get here.
Well, it's fantastic. Great coffee. I love the coffee.
So
that's what we have to look at. It just becomes a mathematical thing, Carol, to look at and say, okay, have we done the things we need to do in preparation, getting ready to go for retirement? So the things that I'll advise and counsel people is that, one, when you retire, I want to have the house paid for. I don't like having a mortgage during retirement for my clients. And the reason is because health insurance comes in, and the cost of health insurance premiums and deductibles and that whole bit as we get older starts becoming the cost of a house. So I try to have the house paid for right about the time that we retire if we can for our clients. So we try to have the house paid for. We have that finished up and done. Hopefully you got those pesky kids, you got them booted out so they're not on your dime anymore at that point in time. And I'm meaning that out of humor. I have a 20-year-old at home still. So with that, you try to have them finished up, and you look around at the assets and say, okay, we take Social Security, we add to that any pensions we might have, we add those together, how much is our target that we want to live on per year, and will 4% or 5% of the savings that we have pay for the difference? And if that becomes the case, you've hit that financial independence. You have to make sure you add health insurance in there, knowing where that's going to come from during that time, too.
That sounds good. I just, you know, have that conversation all the time. I tell my kids, I'll be really mad if I drop over dead next week.
You know, the thing is,
and leave you all my money.
Boy, you know what, Carol? I'd like to say I've never seen that before, but I have seen that before.
Go ahead and have some fun, Carol. Go ahead and have some fun today.
You've got to balance it. I always say that there's a line. There's the amount that you have to save, and if there's anything over that, gain your experiences in life now.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, we're both just in our mid-60s, so it's like, you know, we could live another 20, 30, you know, or we could not.
Well, you know what? Probability is if you guys, you said mid-50s, correct?
60s.
Oh, mid-60s? Probabilities is one of you still being alive by age 90.
Yeah.
All right. Well, good luck.
Good coin. All right.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. 715-845-2155. We're going to take a quick break. Come back with more. We're here with Merle Kelch. If you have a question for Merle, give us a call. We'll be right back on WSAU.
As I went through school, One giant question loomed over me. What did I want to be? But in order to know what I wanted to be, I had to first decide what I wanted to make. I wanted to make more. So I became a teacher. Now I make learning a privilege, not a chore. And frustration, a tool, not an obstacle. I make working hard seem easy, and giving up, impossible. I make an old subject feel like a fresh thought, and unconventional methods common. I make material things less important, and little things like patience and kindness count. I make weekdays more exciting than weekends, and classrooms feel like anything but. I make things different, which is all I ever hoped for. I'm a teacher. I make more.
Find out how you can make more at teach.org. Make more. Teach. Brought to you by Teach and the Ad Council.
One day, I'll teach chemistry to kids.
I'm going to be an architect.
My dream is to be a chef.
At the U.S. Department of Education's Office of Federal Student Aid, we provide more than $150 billion each year in grants, loans, and work study funds, making higher education possible for anyone at any stage of life.
I can go back to college.
I can change careers.
I can make a difference.
Federal Student Aid, proud sponsor of the American Mind. Learn more about money for college at studentaid.gov.
This morning, I saw that report.
I'm concerned about the direction of our country.
While the news and issues we discuss can get pretty serious around here.
And I was so mad I could spit.
The talk doesn't always have to be.
You're more stressed out.
Think of it as conversation with a barroom slant.
Is there any way you can just relax a little bit?
And it's happy hour all day long.
I laugh out loud.
WSAU and WSAU.com. Drink it in.
And we're back here in the studio. I'm Tom King, along with Merle Kelch, Kelch & Associates. Let's go right back to the phone. Good morning. Who are we talking to?
This is Dwayne.
Hey, go on, Dwayne. Dwayne, you're on with Merle. Go ahead.
Thank you. Hey, I got a question for your guest. Did I understand you to say earlier that Social Security was required, or the plan of Social Security was to save, was it 10% or something?
No, Dwayne, the thing got confused in a couple things. We were talking about an article that pops up in here, and the article goes on to have a discussion that the government isn't doing enough to have us save inside of our 401k. And the spirit of the article is talking that, and I'm trying to pop out the name of the article so we can talk that about that, is saying that the paternal pushing that's happening from our government to get us to save more isn't working, and so that we should do more then to have that done. And this is an article from a working paper called The Separation of Intelligence Control, The Retirement Savings Crisis and the Limits of Soft Paternalism,
and we also
by Jacob Hale Russell.
We also mentioned that Social Security was only supposed to be a safety net when it was invented, not your entire retirement portfolio. And what part of your retirement should Social Security be, in your opinion? Is there a percentage?
There's really no percentage. It depends upon what you want to live on. You know, so if you look at you know, Social Security, for many people, Social Security is going to represent anywhere between a half to as much as 80% as a national average during retirement. So if you look at it and say, well, if my Social Security is going to be $2,000 a month, and I'm using that for a round number, folks, and that's not enough, I need $6,000 a month, well, then you got to get some saving put in, you know. So it becomes a number in here. And again, the whole spirit of this, Dwayne, and this whole article in our conversation is that we all know that if we want to put more money away and have more money for retirement, we've got to save more. And if we're not going to do that, the outcome is what it's going to be during our retirement years.
All right, thanks for the call. 715-845-2155, the number to call here if you have a question or a comment for Merle. Let's go back to the phone. Good morning. Who are we talking to?
Yeah, this is Dwayne again. I got cut off.
Oh, go ahead. You had more?
Yeah, you were going to where I was. My question was, if we were supposed to save for our retirement, was that Social Security supposed to be set aside for our retirement or to put it in one big pot and everybody was supposed to get a portion of it originally?
Originally, it was an individual thing. Though it went inside of a pot, actuarially, it was based upon us individually, and it still is. So, for example, Dwayne, if you have a neighbor that makes half as much of you, his Social Security is going to be considerably less than your neighbor on the other side that makes twice as much of you. His Social Security is going to be considerably more. So the Social Security, like the pensions, are actuarially built around who we are and what our numbers are.
And based on what we made during our working life.
Correct.
Okay, so what about the people who have never paid in, period, to Social Security?
Well, there
where is this coming from?
Go ahead. If there's somebody who never paid into the system, they're going to receive a minimum, and it's not much.
Where does that come from, though?
Well, it comes from you and I and the rest of it, all the taxpayers, to put the money in.
Okay, so we're not getting – it's not intended, or the aim was not to be to hit only to the people that put it in. It's supposed to be for everybody to different degrees, but to everybody.
Well, it is. Remember, it was a national safety net, and there's no doubt about that. And one of the reasons that it first came out is because initially spouses, you know, if we look at the traditional household of the days back in the 40s, the gentleman usually worked, the lady usually took care of the kids, and if something happened to him, there was nothing left for her. And that was one of the reasons that it came out. And you know what, from a social standpoint, I don't have an issue or a problem with that by any means. The unfortunate part is I think somewhere along the way, people believe that Social Security is going to be their only retirement. Unfortunately, for many people it is, and unfortunately that's the case, but Social Security was meant to be a safety net, not the entire retirement.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. 715-845-2155. We're going to take a break for some news, and we'll come back with more. Phone lines are open. If you'd like to talk to Merle, give us a call. We'll be right back.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that, overall, you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't seen your lap in months. And even more stuff. But still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed. And they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs. And it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover keytar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff. Create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
News. Now, from AM 550, FM 99.9, WSAU.
I'm Tom King, WSAU News. The National Security Agency is denying that it was aware and exploited the Heartbleed cyber bug. An NSA spokesman said the agency only became aware of the bug when it was made public. The recently discovered bug allowed hackers to access personal data from websites. A report in Bloomberg claimed the NSA knew about the bug but decided to keep it secret so it could use the glitch to gather critical intelligence. It could take some time before all of the victims in the fiery bus crash in Northern California are identified. Medical records may have to be used because bodies were badly burned in the collision between a FedEx truck and a charter bus carrying students to Humboldt State University. The investigation continues as to why that crash happened. There's been another arrest in Wausau as efforts to stop prostitution continue. Police say they've arrested 41-year-old Cronenwetter police officer Jason Rasmussen for soliciting a prostitute and encouraging probation violations. A former deputy sheriff found guilty of sexually assaulting a teenage girl is going to prison. 26-year-old Michael Brayton was a Langlade County deputy, but that ended after he had a sexual relationship with a 15-year-old girl. Brayton entered into a plea deal where his 22 felony charges were reduced to just one, which he pled guilty to. Wisconsin Congressman Tom Petri has announced his retirement. The 73-year-old Republican made the announcement yesterday, ending a 35-year career as a representative for the state. In sports, the Brewers won again, beating the Pirates 4-2 last night. Willie Peralta got the win. Aramis Ramirez, Mark Reynolds hit home runs. The two teams play again tonight. You can hear the game right here. Pregame show at 5:35. The weather forecast today, we're looking for cloudy skies, rain likely, with a few thunderstorms possible as well, a high of 56. Tonight, a low down to 36. Tomorrow, cloudy, a chance of rain once again, high just 46. And then Monday, mostly cloudy, high of 41. That's news and weather. I'm Tom King, Central Wisconsin's Fox News station, WSAU.
Brewers baseball on the Brewers station, WSAU.
Hello again, everyone.
Bob Uecker, Joe Block, and the Brewers on AM 550, FM 99.9.
All right, here we go.
WSAU.
Hey, get up! Get out of here! Go!
The Brewers are right here. AM 550, FM 99.9, WSAU.
Saturday night baseball, Brewers and Pirates starting at 5:35 on News Talk Sports, WSAU.
Let's do it. And we're back here in the studio. I'm Tom King, along with Merle Kelch, Kelch & Associates in Wausau.
Folks, the opinions voiced on this show are for general information only and not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your attorney, accountant, financial advisor, or tax advisor prior to investing. This show contains forward-looking statements which may not come true. Securities investments are...
You thought you could get through the whole thing without stumbling.
You know what I'm trying to do? I'm actually trying to read it a little bit slower than normal because I go back and read. I'm reading it fast. When I read it slow, I can't read the darn thing. Right. So, Securities and Investments Advisory Services offered through HBEC Incorporated, a member of FINRA SIPC. HBEC Incorporated, Kelch & Associates are unaffiliated companies. Folks, in this program is intended for Wisconsin residents only. I'm just going to read it fast anymore. So every, now, so,
okay.
Like the guys in the car commercials.
Yeah. Go back to the MarketWatch website and a couple of their big headlines today. Stay calm. Why this stock market needs a correction.
Indeed.
And then a one down a little bit lower. Merrill Lynch says they're expecting a 10 to 15% correction coming by this autumn. Now, 10 to 15% sounds like a lot to me. What's your take on their contention that not only will there be a correction, but it's going to be a pretty large one?
I disagree with Merrill Lynch on that. But let's take the first article first. It says this stock market needs a correction. I agree. It probably does. We've been to the higher part of the range. What ends up happening is out of here, and folks, there's a little in here, and this is an article from Jonathan Burton. And we take a look at it. They have a point of maximum financial risk, and this is where the market goes up. The market goes up. Everybody's excited. Money moves all over the place. Everybody thinks it's going to be guaranteed rates of returns. Folks, I actually had some client last year said, wow, this is a great year. What do you think we're going to earn next year, 20, 22%? I said 6 or 8. They go, oh, really? I'm like, yeah, next year, last year was just fantastic, but it's not what happens consistently. So he obviously then went, oh, bummer, So he had the euphoria. Next, they're talking about inside of here the anxiety. Then we get denial and fear. Then the market keeps going down and down and down. We get depression, panic, and then capitulation happens. And capitulations, folks, is where the small investor says, I got to get out. When you start seeing money running out of the marketplace, guess what happens to everybody else? You have guys like me and people who are really smart. I'm not in that same category. I just watch the people who are really smart. We start going, all right, it's time to buy because the small investor is getting out. Stuff's going to be on sale. So you buy when the stuff is low. No, that's not what usually happens. Usually we start selling when it's low because we think everything's falling apart. And guess what the market does? It starts going back up. And, folks, this happens all the time. We're always taught from day one to buy low, sell high. A lot of us end up, doing it the opposite simply because we buy high because we get excited because the market's going to be great now. We all know it. But we have to look at the underlying economy. We've been talking about that all along. So in article after article this morning, they talk about the underlying economy doing just fine and continuing to move forward. So we look at the underlying economy. We look at what's happening with the interest rates. We look at what's happening with the Federal Reserve. We look at what's happening with inflation. We look at all these different things. Even our friends in Michigan with the consumer sentiment, even that came out better than normal this past week. And so we look at that, and the economy looks just fine. If we look out a year or 2 years down the road, everything looks fine. We don't see a lot of bumps along the way so much. But we look at it today, and it looks like a heart attack. So we just got to kind of hang in there, and we're going to be just fine as it goes along. If we saw something that was happening as far as the economy falling apart, we didn't know what was happening, things were going crazy all over the world. Well, they are, but economically we're doing okay. Then it might be a time to say, well, there's something there. So do I think we're going to have a 10% correction? Tom, we might very well hit 6 or 8 or 10% correction here in the next couple of weeks. And who knows that particular part? But we take a look at the things that are being sold. We see the emerging markets and the technologies that are being sold. Now, why are they being sold? Because those are the things that ran up the fastest. So from that standpoint, you have a lot more people who want to take some profit out of there relatively quickly. It's normal. It happens all the time. Now, what I did is I went in here, folks, and I took a look at where the Dow is. And I just used the Dow Jones Industrial Average for sake of ease. We went from, some 16,632, which is our 52-week high. We take a look at within the last 52 weeks, within the last 1 year, folks, our low on the Dow was 14,444. So if we think about that, in the last year, we went up and down a pretty good percentage. And if we take a look at our low that we started at the beginning of, this year so far, as we were at some 14,400, some 15,400 and change. And so we're at 16,000. We're not even close to where the low was that we were back in the beginning of February. So we have to get through the sensationalism and the hype that's happening simply because we don't have anything else to talk about, it seems, on the news so much.
715-845-2155 is the number to call here.
No, I don't have anything else to talk about for the rest of the show.
Well, let's talk about this because we've talked about this before, but maybe not for a while, that if folks are looking at their portfolio, looking at their financial advisor, and thinking, you know, I'm not getting the communication I need. I'm not getting the return I want. I think I can do better. And they would come to you and basically do an interview with you as to whether or not they want to hire you. Basically, you'd be doing a job interview with them.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the questions that people should ask when they're thinking about changing or looking at their financial advisor with a critical eye and say, you know, maybe I can do better? What are some of the things that they need to know about a person before they,
there's all this, you look back in the education, and does the education give you an indication? Sure, it can. You know, if a person was a psychology major and then got into the investment world, you know, why is that? And so that could certainly be it. And so I tend to tell people, I was looking at it for a financial advisor who'd been in the investment business for some time or has done some of the education within the industry, the CFP certainly, and that kind of stuff. I'd look for that sort of education. But when you said that, Tom, this popped into my head, and I think this is a great question to ask your financial advisor. You know, the question is to simply say, what would you do differently? Inside of any portfolio that you have, there's some things that are good and there are some things that stink. But everything's got to have some sort of an idea or reason that it comes around to be. For example, Tom, if you said, well, geez, last year I only did 22%, and I'm making this up for a number of folks. If you told me, Tom, I only did 22%, but my neighbor did 26, how can you make it do 26%? You know, my response to that would be, well, guess what? Next year you're not even going to do the 22% because probability says it's not going to happen. And I might say you're not diversified, so we need to spread the portfolio out like this. You may not get the rate of return, but you're not going to have the heart attacks and the up and downs along the way. That may not be what you want to hear, Tom, or as the individual investor, but that's making sure that your long-term portfolio is diversified based upon who you are. So if you have somebody who's telling you what you want to hear, that's probably the wrong person, in my opinion. You know, we talked about it, and I'd said, you know, we had a client who came in our office that, you know, a year ago, folks, they said, I don't want to have any risk inside of my portfolio, and I had nothing to do with the stock market. And so we built a portfolio like that, and we did a review about 3 months ago. He says, how come I'm not making 20% like the stock market did in 2013? Because you're not in the stock market. Well, I'm going to be in the stock market now. And I just kind of said, I'm not putting you there. Because a year ago, you said you didn't want any risk, and now you're just hopping on to euphoria, using the term that we used before. And so that's a person, in my opinion, is a good financial advisor to pick, because they're telling you what you need to hear from an investment portfolio based upon who you are as an individual, from a risk, time horizon, et cetera, et cetera. I would look for that person.
All right, let's go back to the phone here this morning. Good morning. Who are we talking to?
Hey, this is Tony.
Tony, go ahead.
Tony.
Morning. Hey, this is a comment. As you know, a lot of small investors believe that don't trust Wall Street and think the market's rigged, particularly since what happened in 2008. Well, I just heard on a national news broadcast, I heard a commentator make the comment when the market crashed the other day or yesterday or Thursday. He said there was no reason for the sell-off. He said the only reason he could think of is we're due for a correction.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when the average small investor hears a comment like that, it just adds fuel to the fire that the market's rigged, because that's kind of indicating that we're due for a correction, so you should tell all your clients to go out and sell all their stock. I think we need to give logical reasons why the market's falling.
I completely agree. And you know what? And I think it's also irresponsible if you have financial advisors just calling all their clients and saying, well, the news media said there's going to be a correction, sell everything.
Right.
I think it's completely irresponsible. The probability is that, Tony, if we take a look at, you know, 7-10 years from now, the probability is what's happening today is just isn't going to matter.
Right.
Okay. And we know that. And so, you know, in this industry, Wall Street is going to buy and sell on a daily basis based upon emotion, fly back and forth. But the probability and the background of modern portfolio theory, which, by the way, had nothing to do with Wall Street, guys. It had to do all with academia. Simply said is that if we stay with a diversified portfolio, we weather out the bumps, the trend line is going to slope upward in the economy, and we're all going to make money. And you know what? They won Nobel Prizes on it. They're pretty smart guys.
Right.
But the stuff that happens inside of Wall Street, the best thing that occur, in my opinion, is don't watch it. And
right.
I mean that because I have to watch it, but I mean don't watch it because what happens on a daily basis just isn't going to matter so much. Now, when you see stuff that happened like in 2008 and 2009, interestingly enough, is that wasn't caused by Wall Street. It was actually caused to begin with. It was actually caused by the banking industry. Now, the banking industry, can you say that's Wall Street? Well, maybe to a certain degree, the commercials banking side of things. But it was really the caveat that set the fuse up was called a credit default swap. And it was actually designed so that a bank could share its risk because we had so much money pouring into the country and for real estate, so it could share the risk between banks. And the unfortunate part, like anything else, you open up a hole and humans will find a way to exploit the hole. Wall Street actually, to a certain degree, made it bigger, and then came back and ended up fixing it later on.
Right, but you scared a lot of small investors out of the market.
Oh, boy, you scared a lot of big investors, too.
And a lot of them have not come back since, Merle.
Sure, and the unfortunate part is that's also true.
And they missed the bump back up.
And you know what? And one of the speakers, and I'm not going to have his name, but I was out in the Wharton School of Finance here about 3 years ago now. We did an executive week, and they brought in all the smart academia and the investment world out there. And, you know, he said, and now here's a person who's won Nobel Prizes on investing and investing theory and diversification. And he says, you know what? He said, I tapped myself on the back in 1987 because I predicted the top of the market and I got out of the market. And he said, the unfortunate part was I wasn't smart enough to get back in. And that was since 1987.
Great.
And missed a ton of money. So it all comes down to the probabilities of being in the market that makes it happen. The news media, I think, in my opinion, over-sensationalizes all this stuff so much. The stock market goes, it's a waltz. It's two steps forward, one step back.
Right.
It always happens. We all know that. We just have to understand that that's the case, and I think that's where people in the investment arena, such as an advisor that I do and other people, are supposed to be educators and handholders to make sure that you know, and everybody listening, Tony, knows that that's what happens with the marketplace. And you might be scared out when something bad happens. We have to do a little bit of handholding and say, hang in there. Because everybody that went down who stayed in the marketplace in 2008, you know, pretty much everybody's back up. There might be some who are not. But
the bottom line is a small investor still thinks the market's rigged. A lot of these people do.
And I would agree with you as well. And we had that. And thanks for the call. We had that book that came out about the speed investing and how the big guys have the advantage. I think most people, cynical people anyway, me included, agrees that the game is rigged. The big boys will always have a better advantage than the small guys.
Not as much as it was 10 years ago, or certainly not as much as it was 20 years ago.
Really?
Considerably different. Now, I look at this. When I started, and folks, I've been in this business coming up, 25 years now it is, actually. I've been in this business for 25 years, and when I started out, I could get information and data and research that you couldn't get, Tom. You just couldn't get it. It didn't exist unless you paid a lot of money for it.
We've talked about that, and I understand.
It's out there.
Well, I understand that part of it, that with the Internet and everything else, the information is out there. The idea, though, that you get the information in a timely manner, you are able to invest your money in a timely manner as opposed to, you know, the big guys with the supercomputers and all of that.
Yeah, but remember, the big guys with the supercomputers, it's only a few people. It's not everybody that's out there.
But the idea is that the small investor still has the ability to make money in the stock market. You may not make as much as the guys in the know and the big guys, but you have the ability to make money if you do your homework and have a good financial advisor.
Sure.
And I mean,
well, let's look at one of our largest and most successful investors ever, Warren Buffett. So, you know, he started out just because, you know, he started an everyday guy like the rest of us, smart, just had a knack for doing investing and picking good quality companies. He doesn't do high-frequency trading. You know, he's not out there. So he does the same thing as you and I do. He does his research, does his work, buys the companies and that whole bit, except, you know, we buy the company stock, he just buys the whole company.
Yeah.
But it's the same way. He doesn't do the high-frequency trading. The high-frequency trading has always been around. Does it or does it not create some efficiency inside of the marketplace? I don't necessarily know. But the small percentage of a return that it takes away from you and I as individual Toms is probably negligible. It's just that a small percentage of rate of return that it takes away from you and I times all the people in the marketplace becomes a large number to the people who are doing the high-frequency trading. Should you get some regulation? Perhaps, maybe. But the backbone is the backdrop simply is this. We have to put the money away, we have to invest it, and we have to let time take care of that as time goes on. And so the small investor does, you know, the Wall Street and people think it's rigged. Well, you know what? It's probably less rigged now than it ever has been, because now we can tell better if there's insider trading's doing something on the inside. We have more information that's public out there for individuals that everybody has to know the information at the same time. You know, we can't have Martha Stewart's talking to their best friend who actually happens to be the CEO of the company on what the stock is going to do next week. I mean, so that stuff is out there and is being watched better than ever before. I happen to think that the marketplace is more open today than it ever has been. Is it still to a certain degree that some of the big people know information others don't? Sure it is, but it's getting better all the time, in my opinion. It's moving faster.
All right, well, we have some time left. If you have a question for Earl, give us a call. We're going to take a quick break, come back with more. The phone lines are open, 715-845-2155. Back in a moment here on WSAU.
Wildfires burn millions of acres across the country each year. And each year, wildland firefighters battle to contain them. But they can't do it alone. For some communities, it's not a question of if wildfires strike, but when. And a single ember can travel more than 1 mile. As it twists and turns and floats through the air, that single ember can find its way to where you live and can ignite and destroy your home or your community. That single ember can be just as dangerous as the wildfire itself. You can't control where the ember will land, but you can control what happens when it does. You can take action now to prepare your home and your community for wildfire. Get fire adapted. Learn what you can do now to reduce wildfire damage later at fireadapted.org. Prepare, protect, prevail. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council. Learn more at fireadapted.org.
Hi, I'm Patrick Corbin, starting pitcher for Arizona. An injury to your teeth on the playing field can lead to lifelong dental problems. I always wear a mouth guard to protect my smile. You should too. I encourage kids and adults to play it safe this summer and all year round. No matter what your sport is, protect your smile. Wear a mouth guard at every practice and every game.
A message from the American Association of Orthodontists. Visit MyLifeMySmile.org.
From City Hall to somewhere in the Indian Ocean. From Ukraine to wherever. Everything is not so awesome.
Russians' actions over the past.
This was the most visibility we had of any objects in the water.
Will they be able to keep the doctor that they want?
But if you want to make sense of it all and weigh in with your own ideas, then you're in the right place.
I'd like to talk about what you were talking about earlier.
WSAU and WSAU.com.
And we're back here in the studio. I'm Tom King along with Merle Kelch, Kelch & Associates in Wausau. Let's go back to the phone. Oh, there was somebody there, but they have disappeared. So the phone lines are open, 715-845-2155. What else is on your radar screen over there?
They disappeared like the person running the health.org?
They disappeared like 370.
Yeah, no kidding.
I still can't believe that we have not found any evidence of it, that plane with all the technology we have at our disposal, and we cannot find where this plane is.
You know, I was having a conversation with somebody, and they said that ocean is so deep and so rough that it's just
the weather has been crummy in the search area. There's no question.
And one of the things is just
we have satellites that can read the tattoo that you have on your arm from outer space.
Yeah, but what would they be looking at in that ocean?
It's just nothing amazing there. To me. Yeah.
All right. I'm trying to find another article here.
We talked about banks earlier, and there was a story about Wells Fargo doing well. Wells Fargo, the best buy now among the biggest banks out there, most profitable in what they call a harsh environment. And you look at the other ones: J.P. Morgan Chase, Citigroup, Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, all down this week. Wells Fargo was up.
Mm-hmm.
Just off the top of your head, and I'm catching you by surprise with this question, but does Wells Fargo do something differently than the other big banks that would cause them to rise in this situation?
They do. Let's take the backbone of the banking. The backbone of the banking has been like the normal banks that does traditional type of banking between you and I, the little corner banks. And then you have the ones who started getting more of the commercial stuff and more of the high-flying things. So remember, banks and large banks are all individual stocks. Public stock companies. So their job is to try to make that stock as high as possible. So with that, you have a lot of these larger banks that got more and more into things that were not traditional types of banking types of items. So obviously we had the credit default swaps at one particular point in time and, started going into commercial banking and so forth. Well, as the rules are now paring these companies down that they can't do that, they have to commit to either being commercial and or being a traditional type of a bank, it's also pared down some of the losses, as well as credit requirements have come up. I'm sorry, capital requirements come up where the bank has to now have minimum capital requirements. Additionally, they have to now have to start looking more at their crediting, the credit rating of the people that they're giving loans to. So with that, then, the more banks that are in smaller areas, more traditionally done with real estate, and less of the high-flying, for lack of a better term, types of things, those banks tend to be doing a little bit better. And Wells Fargo is just more of a traditional type of a bank in that side of things from their banking operations. So as a result of that, that's been the difference one to the other. And J.P. Morgan Chase, I believe, wasn't it within this past quarter they had to pay that big fine out, too? I think that also hit their stock.
Financials as a sector right now, what do you think?
I don't mind the financials as a sector even now, and I don't mind them continuing going forward. We have to look at the spreads inside of the financial, folks. We talk about an M1 money supply is what the bank pays us when we put the money inside of the bank. And, Tom, what do they pay us? The answer is pretty close to
nothing.
Yeah. But we take a loan back out from the company. We take a loan back out, say, for a new car or something of that nature, whether we're paying 3, 4, 5, or 6%, the difference between what they're giving us when we put the money in and what they're receiving in that loan is what they're called their spread. Well, with the interest rates starting to perk up a little bit and come back up in a 10-year, not up a ton, but they're starting to move some forward momentum. With that being the case, we can see banking having higher spreads because certainly that M1 money supply, your CVs, CDs, savings, checking, and so forth, that's not going to go up anytime soon. So with it, we see the banks are probably going to have higher spreads. So the financials, I do like. I think they'd be pretty good, especially if now we see J.P. Morgan and other larger companies starting to take a little bit of a hit. So that's something we might want to look at and say, hey, does this fit inside of my portfolio? Make sure you chat with your financial advisor prior to doing so. Tom, I popped something up that popped into my head. You know, people have said it all along. You've heard Bill Gates say this. Bill Jobs has said it. We've heard earlier that Henry Ford has said the same type of thing. And that is you need to find something that you can bring to the marketplace that's scalable and large and that you think is going to change everybody's world, and that's how you make a lot of money. We look at this Staples now, and this is an article, well, I guess it's just an article that pops up by Andrea Chang, MarketWatch.com. Staples aims to bring 3D printing to the masses. And people might say, well, I don't understand what 3D printing is or something of this nature. What does that exactly entail? I'm not sure. Well, essentially,
it's sort of like the replicator from Star Trek.
God, you're stealing my thunder, brother.
Oh, okay, all right.
But this is true. In here, we have a Jen Saren, a 45-year-old artist from New York, walked into Midtown Manhattan Staples store with her son Thursday afternoon, eager to check out something she had spotted one day earlier, a 3D printing machine and services. So in here, you have an artist looking at it, and as you go through the article, she talks about she always wants to make these mugs, and she doesn't have to worry about the clay and the firing. She just goes there, and within half an hour, your mug is printed for you on a 3D printer. You walk out with your mug. So the services of this, I think, are going to be absolutely tremendous. You think about it from the sense that you're at home, Tom, and quite conceivably using 3D printing, you break a latch on your refrigerator, and you can go online, download the schematics, hit print, and print one out right there literally in your house.
Make one.
Make one.
Print one. Make one.
Yeah, well, it's using printing, but, yeah, 3D printing.
So it's interesting that, back as we talked about computers and how somebody had made the determination that everybody would want a home computer. Everybody would want a computer in their house. Mm-hmm. There were those at the time who said, and big guys in the industry, why would anybody need a computer in their house?
Yes.
Obviously they were on the wrong side of history. The other guys were on the right side of history.
Again,
is this going to be one of those situations where a 3D printer is going to become part of a person's house?
I think so, yes. And
really?
Not only that, but the software that goes with it, the materials that are going to be printing. You think about it, anything that has the ability to have a semi-liquid state, you can use for a printing.
What does this mean then for the old-fashioned, to use the term, companies that actually make this stuff now in a factory situation? Are we talking about factories closing, companies going out of business, losing jobs?
I don't think so, because if you're going to make, let's say that we're both wearing headphones, folks. And so if you think about the headphones, a person's just not going to go through and say, well, I'm going to print out my headphones, because you can't print out the electronics from it. And everybody's not going to say, well, I can make the cones that go over my ear out of plastic and print those at home, and I'll buy the electronics somewhere else. That's probably not going to be the case. So things that are going to be made in high volume and so forth, you're still going to have your, I'm just using plastics as a case, you're still going to have your injection molded plastics places. That's still going to be the case. But for pieces and parts and things that break and you need one of, you need a washer for something, just go print one. You need a nylon washer, you need a bushing. Maybe you need a bungee cord, you print one. So all these little small little things, I think, start going away because we can just simply make one at home by ourselves.
That's interesting. That's
good. Now, if we could walk up and say, I want Augrave 70 degrees, like Captain Lou, or, Augrave Grave or Gray Tea Augrave. How does I say that? I don't even remember how it went. But he goes up to the machine and says, well, I want tea Augrave, 70 degrees, and it shows up, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's coming. But 3D printing, I think, is the direction it's going to go. And, folks, I'm trying to give you the name of the gentleman who started the 3D printing. It's up here in this article, and I'm just missing it.
That's going to be a fascinating turn in the technological world. Interesting. Going to be interesting to watch that in the next 5, 10, 20 years.
It's just going to be absolutely brilliant. Now, all right, 3D printers right now, and between $1,300 to $1,400 for very basic, simplistic ones, $65,000 for much, and I know they go way up past that depending upon what you want to do.
And back when high-def TVs and home computers were very expensive as well when they first started.
Mm-hmm. I think 3D printing is on the way. They even show in here that you can actually print out your own guitar.
All right. Well, we are out of time for today. If folks want to get a hold of you on Monday, how can they do that?
You can give us a call at 715-849-3600. Come on and visit us at 3rd Avenue and Bridge Street here in Wausau, Wisconsin. Toll free outside of the Wausau area at 866-355-5100 or find us online at KelchandAssociates.com.
All right, we'll talk to you again down the road.
We'll see you soon.
Coming up on 9 o'clock, the news is next. The polka shows are on the way. And don't forget the red-hot Milwaukee Brewers back in action tonight, the Brewers and the Pirates from Miller Park. Pre-game show at 535 right here on WSAU.
News, talk, sports. WSAU Wausau, WSAU FM, Rudolph, Stevens Point, Marshfield, Wisconsin Rapids.
Fox News Radio, I'm Chris Foster. More pro-Russian violence in eastern Ukraine.
Men have seized a police department in Russian-speaking Slavyansk. Ukraine's interior minister, Arsen Avakov, says the men were armed and wearing camouflage, adding that Kiev's response will be tough because there's a difference between protesters and terrorists. Slavyansk is in Ukraine's Donetsk region. Our men have already taken over key government buildings in Donetsk and are now calling the region a republic. Demonstrators say they want to hold a referendum.